Coke Show had become a spot on the map, not just a spot on the radio. In the cars, in the parking lot, it was teen heaven. For a generation of Anchorage kids, the Coke Show was the event and the bun the place, until both disappeared in the summer of 1970. There were other hangouts, but the bun had the Coke Show.
And their first record, exciting sound. What's going on out there? Bunch of crazy honker bunkers.
It's time to think big with Big Alaska guests.
Big Alaska adventures.
And no good lying through your tooth, tall Alaska tales. It's the Big Alaska Show. Coming to you from the studios of AM 750 KFQD, 103.7 FM, and streamed worldwide at KFQD.com. I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Stevenson, Big Alaska Show friends. The Royal Coachman from high atop the Bun Drive and creator of the Coke Show, Ron Moore, joins us. Plus, we'll be playing a tall Alaska tale for you to enjoy. Designed to raise your spirits and not your blood pressure, unless you're a guy named Mike Ford.
How about that?
Good morning. You sound so calm and reserved.
Yeah, that's unusual.
We watched you last night on KTVA 11, filling
green
in
screen song and dance for weather. Yes.
Weather.
Yeah.
And our good friend Mike Ford, the friendliest voice on broadcasting.
Thank you.
Is going to be doing some weather.
Yeah, a little fill in weather. Put on the tie and jump around in front of the green screen and tell you what wonderful weather we're having. And
you did a great job.
Thank you very much.
Amy pointed out you had a nice purple shirt. She sees things that I never even pay attention to.
Thank you, Amy.
It's interesting to watch it because I know that you're looking at a green, you're working with a green screen.
Right.
And you're actually doing a number of things.
Yes.
You are the proverbial duck that's calm on top,
right,
and pedaling like
right,
crazy underneath.
Exactly. Especially when a slide pops up that you don't realize was going to pop up, and it's like, okay, we'll just move along and, you know, just share the weather picture of what's going on. And the thing about it is, if you can share the weather picture of Alaska, you can share the weather picture anywhere, right? There's enough going on. Man, it's amazing when you think about all the different fronts that come. One of the people at the National Weather Service years ago told me at any given time, we could have five different fronts coming our way. And it's like, wow. Like right now, they're just getting blasted down south. It's a heat wave down lower 48.
I was thinking about your saying at the very beginning that you had the wrong slide come up.
Yeah.
And this show should have prepared you
right
for that.
It did. I just thought, oh, it's like going to work on Saturday morning with Steve. We'll just roll. Fly the plane.
You should have said, welcome to the Big Alaska Show.
Yeah, no, I don't think they would have appreciated that, but it was fun.
No, you look great.
Thank you very much.
And so we look forward to seeing you again, maybe on weekends.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll be there tonight, so.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
We'll look there.
Thank you.
We're over there going, that's my man,
Mike
Ford.
Thank you very much.
We're going to have a fun show today. Our guest is Ron Moore, and Ron Moore truly is a pioneer of Alaska broadcast back in the 60s, especially when he did the Coke Show. Last couple of weeks, we had the class of 1968. We went out and recorded a Big Alaska Show for their high school reunion. And we put a pretty cool podcast together that you can find at BigAlaskaShow.com. And what we thought we would do is follow that up with having someone that they would all know who was a celebrity.
Right.
I mean, this guy was the Dick Clark.
Dick Clark of Alaska.
Of Alaska.
Yeah.
When you learn more about his history and looking back on, this guy really was a pioneer that brought in this whole new genre and fun into broadcast, in Alaska broadcast.
And we're talking during a time, see, the other part, you talk about the duck thing with the pedaling under the water. I mean, back then, to have a remote broadcast on a regular basis was a phenomenal feat, because you had to have all this, and I'll be interested to find out, you know, what they used to pull that off, because I know just back from my time, and his time predated my time, when we used to go out and do those remote broadcasts, you'd have to have your antennas up, and they had to be aimed exactly the right direction so you could get the MARTI transmitter, and there's just all sorts of things that you just don't think about.
And you have that experience. Unlike me, mine was more video background.
Right.
And then I got into the radio side of things, which really shows when you listen to our shows, because I'm a, you know, I wasn't educated in French schools where they give you a pen and a piece of paper. I have to, digital editing is my friend. And when we talked to Ron, and your background is starting back then, in the beginning of your career, digital was not a thing.
There was no digital.
This is going to be a really interesting show, for especially for us.
Yes.
But we had the class reunion of 1968 a couple of weeks ago. We recorded a show and posted as a podcast. Go to BigAlaskaShow.com, and because I know a number of the classmates at that time were very, very interested in this show. So we're going to bring on Ron Moore here in just a moment. We also have a Tall Alaska Tale. And We have the making of a Tall Alaska Tale.
Or the unmaking.
We haven't told
on this
Ron,
one. Yeah.
Now, we haven't told Ron our disclaimer. I failed to let him know that one.
Yeah.
So,
we can do that. We'll fill him in.
We're eligible to win our own prizes.
And we usually do.
Usually do, yeah. So I say we probably should start a Big Alaska Show out. This commercial we made was part of that class of 1968 reunion that we did.
Yeah.
We couldn't get anybody to do stuff for us, so we had to go to the wives of the classmates to do this. And this is Paris Buzza, who got up and read this baby cold. And
did a great job.
And this is, so I'd be remiss, Mike, if we didn't start the Big Alaska Show out with some of the most caustic coffee
ever made.
Folks, the key to doing a morning radio show, especially an early Saturday morning radio show, is a strong cup of coffee. And there's no stronger cup of Joe than the Big Alaska Show blend, the intense early morning coffee for intense early morning ingestion. That's why it's the preferred coffee for the graduating class of 1968. 50 years! Yeah, way to go, guys. 50 years has a way of slowing you down, especially if you're raised teenagers that'll put a lot of hard bark on you. Enter Big Alaska Show blend to the rescue. Just one sip of this caffeine-packed swill gives you all the energy you need to crank out a loud sophomore thump ditty while raising your boot to the backside of a teenager. Plus, Big Alaska Show blend acts as a heavy colonic and makes the Texas two-step one step too many. Beer horn. Where's the beer horn? Oh, okay. Bitter biting and with a specific gravity of basalt, Big Alaska Show blend intense early morning coffee for intense early morning gas.
Oh, yeah. Pour me a cup, it's time to get up and face the world, my friend. Pour me a cup, I can't get enough for that Big Alaska Show blend.
And that's the way we roll here in the Big Alaska Show. When we come back, we have a broadcast legend, Ron Moore, the Royal Coachman, is going to join us. And we've got a Tall Alaska Tale. As we say, designed to raise your spirits, not your blood pressure.
Unless you're a guy now.
Unless you're Mike Ford working the board over there. Dance Monkey Boy at AM 750 KFQD, 103.7 FM, or streamed worldwide at KFQD.com. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to the Big Alaska Show. I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Steve. Our show brought to you in part by Alaska Enterprise Solutions, the authorized sales agent for Alaska and Xerox. Call Mike Ferris or visit him anytime at aesalaska.com.
Our guest is Ron Moore. We recently did a Big Alaska Show to honor the 50th reunion for the West High School class of 1968, and a major memory for that class was The Coke Show, a radio show broadcast from the top of a popular drive-in called the Bun Drive-In. Its creator and talent was called the Royal Coachman. And so if you were a student in the 60s, or at that time, in Anchorage, Alaska, you knew all about the Bun Drive-In. Please give a warm Big Alaska Show welcome to Ron Moore. Mr. Moore, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're sounding good. I can hear you.
I was talking to Mike. I'm really sorry that we're not just sitting down and visiting with you, because there's so much broadcast history that you have. But I have to tell you, I went to Central Junior High in West, and I would go downtown to near Betty's Record Den, and there you'd be with all the girls surrounding you, and band members were surrounding you, and you had this little entourage. I told Mike that Ron Moore was responsible for more people getting into broadcast at that moment. I think you had a surge of people, of young people saying, I want to do that. You were a popular broadcaster who catered basically to teenagers and was high atop the Bun Drive-In. For those that weren't here at that time, tell us what high atop the Bun Drive-In was, Ron.
Well, that's, I guess, what they referred to, all the commotion that went on atop the drive-in restaurant there on Northern Lights across from Sears Ball. That the Coke Show originated from there in 1959, late 59. And it was initially a fairly small drive-in, but it grew and was enlarged across the street where the parking lot expanded to accommodate a whole bunch of vehicles that were a part of our show every night.
When we talk about the Coke Show, did you do the debut on Christmas Eve? Did you do your first show in winter?
Yeah, that was, I don't know if that was a stunt or that was just very poor planning. They had planned it to go on the air a couple of weeks before, but they had problems with those tremendous landlines that we used for the high-quality broadcast signal back to the studio, and they couldn't get the line in place. So finally they got it in place, and the chief engineer over at KFQD said, are you ready? Okay. But Christmas Eve was cold, and the fairly small broadcast booth at that time, the window was completely frozen over, had a little space heater.
Wow.
And the turntables wouldn't turn, so I took the platter off the top of it and held it in front of the space heaters to get
oh my turn. God. And now this was probably broadcast on KFQD. Was that the station?
Yeah, KFQD was the originator of the Coke Show, and a year later it went live from the drive-in restaurant. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the Coke Show. It was called the Coke Show. You were in this little booth on top of a drive-in, and the Bun Drive-In was really a classic hamburger drive-in, a la with car hops and the whole bit, right?
Oh yeah, and the car hops. I don't know if they were the first car hops in Anchorage, but it was the first place in Anchorage to have speed bumps, because the kids would come through there with their cars and about pick off the car hops as they came out of the restaurant to, you know, to wait on the cars. Well, the first Coke Show was originated from the studios of KFQD back in 1958 when two guys that I had worked with earlier at KENI Radio went out on their own and put together sponsors like Anchorage Cold Storage, which was Coca-Cola, Sears, and Alaska Sales and Service originally. And we weren't playing much popular music back then. There were only three stations in Anchorage, and I believe they gave me an hour under those sponsors on KFQD initially, and then when the Bun Drive-In went live with the Coke Show in 59, it was originally an hour from 6:30 to 7:30, Monday through Saturday, and on Sunday afternoon we played all oldies. Then the show extended to 2 hours from 6:30 to 8:30, and then I had to get back at the studio and do live from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m.
Sound like Mike Ford's schedule there.
So you had a first-class radio telephone license, didn't you, Mr. Moore?
No, I had a third class, which was required.
So then you had an engineer, because you had to have an engineer on for the transmitter after 6 p.m., right?
Well, he wasn't there, but there was supposed to be one there. But we had to have third-class radio telephone licenses, which I think, I don't remember how often they renewed, but eventually that was done away with, too.
Right. It all went away in like 1980-something.
Yeah.
So when you started doing this thing live, and there were only three radio stations at the time, so you had now there's tons in Anchorage.
Yeah.
But the time, did the Bun Drive-In, did it get much busier fairly quickly, or did it take time to build?
No, it built pretty fast, and that's the reason it was moved across the street, because the parking lot didn't accommodate enough people, and they were parking across the street in the Sears Mall parking lot to be a part of the show.
I bet you that felt really good to go to the owner of the Bun Drive and say, I'm sorry, man, we've just got too much traffic coming to your business.
Well, it really impacted their business in several ways. I think he told me the first weekend, even in the winter, he had the highest sales of Coca-Cola he'd ever had since he'd opened. So
yeah.
Coke was happy with that, I'm sure.
You gave yourself the name The Royal Coachman. How'd you come up with that name? And you had a jingle, too, Ron. You had your own jingle.
Yeah, it all got a little carried away eventually. I was in the Army in Whittier, Alaska, all things with Armed Forces Radio and Television, doing a late-night show for the troops. And each night we pretended to travel to some place to hear live music. As an example, we would pretend to go to New Orleans and maybe hear Fats Domino. But I'd been injured and was laid up for a while, and while watching TV, I saw this old movie with horse-drawn carriage, and they were approaching a palace, as I remember, and the sound of the horns that welcomed their arrival. And out of that came this idea of a musical journey that would allow their imagination, I guess my imagination, to travel anywhere aboard the Royal Coach. And the jingle followed. This one is something that established the theme of the show, like the singers opened it with just sort of a doo-wah sound. They didn't have a lot of lyrics. And then there was an instrumental bed where I could say hello, and then it would close out with the singers. And the whole thing lasted like under 2 minutes, but it was first used in Anchorage on KFQD in 1958. And from there, I guess, everything went royal. The Royal Roost was the broadcast booth at the Bun Drive-In. My cars were royal coaches, of course, with music notes on the hubcaps and Florida lays on the grill and the Royal Pad Teen Center, and it just got carried away.
Were you a motorhead growing up as a kid? You were a celebrity, Ron. I mean, you were sporting pretty, I mean, you got flashy, it looks like. I was trying to look for this one comment. They talked about one of the cars you drove. It was just so.
Well, I didn't start off with all those fancy things, but that royal image, I guess, I had to keep up with it. And cars, I was always a car nut. In school, I didn't have a big fancy car, but when I came out of the Army, my sister and I went together and bought a 57 Chevy Bel Air Tudor hardtop, which today would be worth lots of money, but that was the first Royal Coach. And then we ended up with Corvettes, even Ferraris and Porsches, and I think I had a Lotus one time, and I guess part of the image I had to keep up with, but it was fun, and I enjoyed the cars, of course.
Here I found it says, one of his cars was a black 1958 Cadillac with painted gold hubcaps and musical notes on the seat covers. And it said, on the driver's side door was RC in tall gold letters. Later he owned a red 1967 Cougar with Here Comes Ron Moore spelled backwards across the hood so it could be read in the rearview mirrors. Did you do your own marketing?
Well, I guess, but I got into a lot of things by people around me. There was a group called the Paysetters, which when I started doing all these shows, I had to have help, and there were five or six people that became a part of this group, and they were the ones that almost managed me into things that I wasn't ready for, but it worked out great, you know. And the Paysetters were oftentimes responsible for some of the gimmicks we would do on the Coke show, like getting kidnapped from the show one night. And
oh, that's awesome.
Being drug off into a cabin way off in the boondocks, and the next morning dragging me out to the airport on vacation because that was planned. But the next day, Dick Lobdell, bless his heart, was the PD at KENI, where I was at the time, and he was getting so many calls about this kidnapping, he called me while I was on vacation and said, we may have to do something else. So I recorded a message saying, I'm not really kidnapped.
Oh, that's awesome.
This is Alaska's version of War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
How much did you have to fight management, though, to play rock and roll, Ron?
Early on, you know, I was later called the Rebel. I didn't look at myself that way at the time. But, like, my first job at KBYR was a Saturday afternoon show called Teen Time, and I was still in high school. And somehow the guy that was my mentor, his name was Bob Steamboat Fulton. In fact, his daughter is now the GM at Channel 2. Nancy?
Oh, Nancy, yes.
Yeah, that was her dad that was my mentor to get me on KBYR in 1954, and I did this show, and I would play, in those days there wasn't a lot of rock and roll coming out, but there were songs like Shaboom by the Ku Cuts and by 55 Rock Around the Clock and stuff like that, and I'd get hold of those records somehow, and I'd play them, and I stick them in the corner, and the manager's wife was the music director, mm-hmm. and during the week she didn't like that music, so she'd go through and take her scissors and scratch out the
You were playing the sounds of Satan, Ron.
Well, then the kids would come up with another copy of the record.
Nice.
And dumb me, I didn't know I was getting in trouble with the manager's wife by playing the record again. I just was too naive, I guess.
Oh, gosh.
That's what happened. I went to KUNI and finally ended up with that 1 hour on KFQD, sponsored by Coke and those guys at night. That was the only time we played that music, and the survey came out, and the only time KFQD won the rating was that hour at night.
Oh, wow.
Look at and by that time, it was at KUNI.
Oh,
and they pulled me back to KFQD and switched to, in 1959, to top 100 radio on KFQD.
The Coke Show went from 1959 to 1970?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I remember it went off the air in the spring of 1970. I had left Anchorage for 2 years in 61 to take a job in the lower 48, so I didn't do the show for that period of time, but I came back in 64 to work for Jay Perry at KFQD, but the Coke Show was on KENI, and KFQD had a show called Soundwave with Scotty Ferguson, who was by that time the new number one in Anchorage. But the folks at Coke kept bugging KENI to hire me, and when I did go, I originally didn't want to compete with Scotty by doing the Coke Show
right.
against Soundwave. He was really good. But before long, I was back in the chicken coop, the royal roost at the Bun.
Nice.
The royal roost.
And in 1966, I had the highest ratings I have ever had in all my years of radio on that show.
We've got some posts from classmates who would later post on the various high school blogs. And, Mike, you'd really appreciate this. It says, Moore hit Anchorage with a fashion style that took local teens by storm. He wore gold... gold lame jackets and ruffled satin shirts with RC embroidered on the front. He always drove the showiest car in town. And the other thing I really like about this, Mike, is blushing teenage girls dressed in tight pink cashmere sweaters and strapless gowns crowded around Moore during sock hops at their schools or local
wow.
teen clubs. In their hands, the girls clutched their Ron Moore fan club cards. Ron, we don't see that kind of thing anymore. What a legacy that you got to live. And what's funny is to hear your side of the story is sort of like, Ron, you need to do this. Okay, I'll do that.
What time do you want me there? Yeah.
Well, that was sort of it, but I was enjoying myself so much. You know, the initial days in radio, the music had trouble getting played. Even when I did a regular show before we had a full top 40 format, if you want to call it that, I still enjoyed it thoroughly. And when I had a chance to go out remote with Bob Fulton, I remember we'd go out to Dairy Queen and do a remote in the afternoon. But most of the time, we never had any remote transmitters at all. It was later when we get the Marty gear. But those days, there were landlines, and there was always noise on those lines. When I first did the Coke Show, the landlines were so bad. Charlie Gray was a great chief engineer at KUNI, and he put an equalizer on the end of the line, or the music sounded like it was, you know, rolling off at 1,000 cycles. So, but they still showed up at the Bun Drive-In. I guess they have just appreciated being there and having fun.
Sure. Look at their transistor radios when they get out of their car and go wandering around, or they just cranked up the monaural radio.
We had a big PA system with speakers out over the roof, and on top of the broadcast booth, there was a big speaker there, and then I had a microphone strung out all the way from the broadcast booth to the intersection, which was at the end of the parking lot, so that when the kids took off, even if I was playing music, I could pot it up. The Beach Boys were playing 409, their dual exhaust would pick up. And then the police would be two blocks down the road listening to the radio,
waiting for them to get to the red light.
I heard about that later, you know, and I said, uh-oh.
I remember a bunch of my friends went and crowded the booth, and they sang the record of I'm Henry VIII, I Am.
Oh, yeah.
I remember it was some ridiculous number of times they wanted to break the record of singing I'm Henry VIII, I Am.
Mm-hmm.
People would do dedications. This, Mike Ford, was the social media of the time.
The Royal Coach.
They're hilarious.
No, that was a riot, yeah.
Are there any memorable dedications that stick out?
We had a rock band every night that we managed to be a guest on the show, the Coke Show, and they would usually answer the phones, and they would hand it to me and say, this is so-and-so, whatever. And I remember one night they handed me the phone ready to go live on the air, and I heard this lady's voice saying something like, "Now, Ronnie, quit playing that rock and roll, and let's hear some Liberace. This is your mother calling." That was my mother giving me a bad time, and the horns went wild for 10 minutes at the parking lot.
What did you call those guys, the honky honkers, or what was it, the honker bonkers? Or?
Oh, gee, I don't know if I can remember that, but, you know, a lot of them had names on their cars, like GTO Joe and T-Bird Tommy, and one guy that used to race his car all the time had Sayonara across the back of it because he thought he was always going to beat everybody.
They'd be going around Mike and revving and honking, and,
yeah.
And in fact, Mike Ford first heard your voice. You talk about smooth.
You were the traditional broadcast. I mean, you had the kind of stuff going on that made me want to get into radio back in the day. So that was.
Well, that's a compliment. I think the Coke Show during that period of the 60s that was so much a tumultuous time may have been a release for not only the kids, but a lot of people because, you know, the music format of the late 60s became a problem. We didn't have much room for a 17 minutes of Inagata De Vida, but kids would call in requests most of the time. You know, they've requested the Doors and the Beatles, but at the same time, they were still into the Monkees and Jackson 5 and all those guys. I don't think it impacted the way I did the show much, and if it did, I wasn't aware of it.
I was wondering, because when you look at the 60s and how much change happened in a relatively short period of time, and this is a time when we didn't have social media, when we didn't have Facebook, when we didn't have Internet. Your background, Ron, I mean, you're a product of, you started your radio career in Chicago. How old were you when the radio bug bit you, Ron?
Oh, I was, 14, 15, but I didn't know that was going to be a career. In fact, I didn't know I was going to have a career out of all this until I came out of the Army. Like in 53, I'd been on a team of teenagers from the high school, a group called, not the JCs, I'm trying to remember what, they had their own little projects, and at the end of each year they had an awards banquet, and somehow I was chosen to be our chapter's representative at the awards banquet, and the awards banquet was hosted by one of Chicago's top DJs and one of the first two personalities of radio in the country, Howard Miller. The kids called him Moo Moo because they woke him up every morning. But Howard asked me to provide news articles from my high school on a weekly basis.
Wow.
To the studios in Chicago downtown at WIND. And that's all I did. I just brought them to him. And one day he said, "Why don't you read some of these? It's on the air live, these announcements." And that was my first bug, I guess.
And that was a time when you got to hear really good doo-wop.
Oh, yeah.
I've always enjoyed that kind of radio at that time. Was it the military that brought you up to Alaska?
No, my folks had gone to Anchorage in the summer of 1952, and I stayed in Chicago. And they weren't planning on staying, but when they did, I came up the following year just to work the summer because I had a high-paying job, and I never left. I went into Armed Forces Radio in 1956 and was stationed down at Whittier and had good experience there with AFRTS. But when I came out of the Army, they still weren't playing popular music. The guys at KFQD, and I remember them clearly, the ones I first went to work with, some of them were legends. In fact, in 1954 at KBYR, I worked with Reuben Gaines and Ed Stevens.
Nice.
These guys that were already legends nationwide that went on to become Alaska legends, but we had no live even radio networks to Alaska. They were all on KBYR. They were playing music to some extent, all standard stuff, you know, Sinatra, Doris Day, and whatever. And on KFQD and KENI, they were still playing Gunsmoke and Amos and Andy and all those shows, the Green Hornet. And so when I wasn't playing music on KFQD, I was probably running those tapes.
Now, when you went outside in the early 60s, where did you go to?
Well, I started to go. I had a job offer at a little station in Bakersfield, California, called CAFI, which was a top 40 front runner, and I wanted the experience. My goal was to go to L.A. someday, you know, but I figured Bakersfield, maybe they could hear me from Bakersfield. But I didn't make it that far because I took the job of a program director at a station with a combination as a sports director on television at KFPB in Great Falls, Montana, where my first wife was from. And she convinced me that if I got that job there, we could get married and live ever happy and in Great Falls, which didn't last that long because I ended up back in Anchorage.
You mentioned Reuben Gaines, Ed Stevens. Mike did Herb Shainland's.
I was Herb's director for a couple years on the Hotline show. That was very.
Oh, really?
Yeah, over at QD back in the day. That was.
Yeah, fun. Herb was doing news when I was at KFQD during the earthquake. I was the first person back on the air in 1964. The earthquake was on the air for 54 straight hours because nobody could get there.
Now he was on AFRN. He was on AFRN when that went down, right? He was.
No, I was on KFQD when the earthquake hit.
Right, but Herb was on AFRN, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he was doing part time.
Okay.
News at KFQD.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. We actually have a great little interview piece with him, Ron, that you'd enjoy, which he tells about how they were going to start this transmitter up or some kind of
a generator.
Yeah. And it never started.
It had never started before. And they thought, well, at least we've done our duty if it starts now. And it did start.
Yeah, just they were going to leave. And their excuse was, well, we couldn't get the generator to work. But it just so happened it's the one time it did work. So they had to stay on the air.
Well, in fact, I was downstairs in that basement with that old Army generator you're talking about. The first one wouldn't start. The second one did.
Oh, my God.
And it had this big exhaust pipe on it that went outside that I forgot to open.
Oh, no.
So all the black exhaust came back into the room. And there was one little light on a part of the generator that lit up and sort of glowed. So I thought something was working. But I went back upstairs, and all the equipment in the control room, which I was the last one out of the station, had been damaged pretty badly, and you probably never saw a picture, but the control room set with little windows looking out to the transmitter, 50,000-watt transmitter with all these gauges, and I could see a few of them working, and the only way I found out I was on the air, I went out of my office and got a little portable radio and got feedback, because the microphone I had to plug direct into the bottom of the stay level because the console was smashed.
Wow. Where was the studio located then, Ron?
Turning in by the sea, right at the end of Northern Lights Boulevard, right where everybody fell into the cliff and the ocean.
Wow.
Oh my gosh, man.
Yeah, I lived two blocks away from it at the time. Getting back on the air, I didn't know what had happened for sure because KFQD in those days was in the path of the approach to International Airport, and sometimes the planes would come so low they'd vibrate the building. We were doing a live newscast at 5:30 that night, Scotty Ferguson and I, and when we heard this rumble, everybody started heading out the building. And I finally, when the safe came out of the bookkeeper's office, rolled down the hall and lodged itself into the door of the control room, I figured it's time for me to get out of there.
Wow.
And when I went out and stayed around in the parking lot for a while things bounced around, watching the tower and looking, hoping the guy wires didn't break, went back inside. It was pretty well torn up. But the first guy back to the station at that time was an engineer, a young guy named Denny O'Day, and I was ad-libbing my way to oblivion because I didn't know what had happened. I didn't know how much this affected the rest of the world.
Right.
I didn't want to scare everybody, you know?
Yeah.
So I just kept saying, this is radio station KFQD in Anchorage, Alaska, owned and operated by the Federal Communications. It's just going on and on.
Wow.
And finally, Denny came back and he says, well, we can hear you. And I unplugged the microphone so he could tell me he lived about a block away from where I lived, and his second story was now on the ground. That's how much his house had sank during the earthquake. And, of course, I went on 54 straight hours because the first time I got a break, it may have been Herb Shainland that got there first. I'm trying to remember. It was dark, and I went outside. You couldn't get down Northern Lights Boulevard because there was this huge chasm that you couldn't get across. So I went back in and went back to work.
54 hours?
That's something.
Something I'm trying to remember, people would leave messages to be broadcast out to the bush.
It was two. KE and I had the original one called Muckluck Telegraph.
That's it.
Yep.
Oh. And then KHAR and Reuben had one of the evenings, too, and I'm trying to remember what it was called.
It just drives you crazy.
North Wind or something, but they were programs where people during the day would come by the station or call in when they were visiting from the bush. And they'd get stranded in Anchorage, or they had a doctor's appointment, and there was no communications to their people in remote Alaska. And they would leave these messages, sometimes very poorly written longhand. I had to do the show quite a few times, so I remember trying to read not only their handwriting, but where they were from. Because some of those Alaskan villages, you know, I still couldn't pronounce 30
right.
years later.
Sure.
But it was important to them.
Oh, yeah. When I was at KNOM in the late 70s, they still had a hotline show. And, you know, and then it was twice a day, you know, and some of those were dubious message. Stinky, meet Mary. The 402 will arrive. She has the package. And yeah. I'm thinking, wonder what's in that package Mary's bringing.
You had to know Tom Bush then, right?
Oh, yeah. Tom was my first boss in Alaska. He was a great guy.
He's another legend, yeah.
Yeah, he was a great guy.
In fact, you would really appreciate Mike Ford's debut on radio was the Iditarod, and he was supposed to announce what was a white pass.
Oh, yeah, I was out towards Cape Nome, and Tom was going to come to me, and it had been, regular Tom, right? You know, just really low-key. And then we went to the AFRN network and Mutual network, and all of a sudden there's Network Tom. And I'm like, and I know he's coming to me next, and I don't see anything. So I'm making it all up for 30 seconds until I finally see a lamp coming around the corner, and I'm able to give a report. But, I mean, yeah, Tom was the most. Yeah. Tom could tear apart a transmitter, write a grant.
Yeah, he was a good engineer.
Do a morning show with six funny voices. There wasn't anything.
I covered the first Iditarod, and the guy we hired from Anchorage to fly us out flew 50-gallon drums of fuel for the plane in August and dropped them off at Rainy Pass. And our first Iditarod stopping at Rainy Pass, it had snowed 14 feet and we couldn't find the fuel.
Wow.
Ron Moore, thank you so much for taking the time for us.
I appreciate being with you guys and reliving the old moments. There was a lot of fun back then, and I've almost forgotten it, but you helped me relive it a few minutes here.
We want to be in the Bun Drive-In. We want to bring it back. Thanks for being a star, even though you didn't expect to be one. It gives the rest of us hope.
Thank you.
To my lovely wife, Amy, love you, baby girl. Looking forward to seeing you soon. And Mike Ford, always a great fun starting a Saturday morning out with you. And why don't you take us out as you so eloquently do, young man?
All right. We want to thank Ron, of course. And I was mesmerized there. How about you?
Oh, that's fantastic.
Is that fun? We want to thank our sponsors, too. Neighbors Windows and Doors, Alaska's window experts at 6251 Tunnel, or neighborswindowsanddoors.com, and Alaska Enterprise Solutions. They're your Xerox sales agent for Alaska. Visit AESAlaska.com. Remember, if it's Big Alaska Guests, Big Alaska Adventures, and no good lying through to Tall Alaska Tales, it's got to be the Big Alaska Show. Have a great week, everybody.